You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, thank you. Thank you for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's great to be back, folks. I'm all ready and ready to go, right? We're ready to go. I mean, this is our first day back. This is my first day back since being off, taking time off to do some writing for the last time, that is. I'm going to retire from it because I just feel that it is right to do at this right time. At this time, I think it's the right thing to do at this time. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me right here at Block Talk Radio. LinkedIn, Google, I'm all over the place. If you're looking for me on the internet in general, I shouldn't be too hard to find, especially if you're interested in being a guest on the show or, you know, with your book or product or whatever it is, or just general conversation. This is great, folks. I am totally in awe. It is so hot in Chicago. I mean, this is ridiculous. And for some reason, it's the first day of summer, and it is showing it. It's proving it right here. It is the first day of summer. We were in the 90s yesterday. I think the 90s before that. And Chicago is in the 90s again. And my understanding is some parts of the United States are just baking, like Arizona, 120 degrees, man. I'm assuming that's out in the desert, you know. So maybe not. Maybe it's inland. Who knows? But it's hot all over, man. I mean, it is something. It's in Nevada, Las Vegas, Arizona. These states with these triple-digit numbers pertaining to the weather, the heat. You know, the heat. So when it's this hot, you always tell people try to stay out of the sun, out of the humidity, out of this treacherous weather, because people are actually dying. I think 8 people died in Arizona pertaining to the heat. The cause of their deaths were no doubt the heat. And, you know, we want to be cautious of that. And I've always been told when it's this hot, 90s or above, it's best not to be outside doing any strenuous activities, especially when the sun is burning down. I have seen some people actually try to take eggs and bacon out on the sidewalk when it's this hot and above to try to see if the egg is, if it's going to cook. You've heard that old saying, that old slogan, it's hot enough outside to cook an egg. People tried that. They tried eggs and bacon. And somehow it didn't work, folks. The egg did not cook. it probably burnt like the rest of us, but it did not it did not cook. You know, you did not. Oh, well. Anyway, you listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is hot as hell, folks, in the city of Chicago and in some states around America. However, if you're feeling hot or whatever, make sure you get in, stay hydrated. You know, take a bottle of water with you, stay hydrated, put on a hat or a cap, try to keep some of the sun, the blaring sun, from hitting your forehead. We don't want to see people getting heat stroke or, you know, having some sort of ailment from the heat, skin cancer, things like that. If you're going to go to the beach, make sure you take some sun lotion or something. This weather can be dangerous. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's about time, but it's dangerous if you do not do the right things. And that's what the George Wilder Jr. Show is all about, making the world a better place one day at a time. This is the talk of our times. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for tuning in. It's going to be something else. I think we have, let's see, we should be right back. Yeah, well, I hope you enjoyed that. I was sort of, my attention was taken away a little bit because I'm watching videos of the governor and talk and the mayor. They can't stand each other. They're blaming each other. One of the things about Rauner, the governor of Illinois, this guy, he has line item veto. He can enact a budget at any moment, but he chose not to. He chooses to blame other people for the state of Illinois. And that's totally not true. He tries to act like he's the sane one, that he's the rational one. And all the rest of us, we're just crazy. We don't know what we're talking about. We know what we're talking about. He doesn't. You know, this is a guy who blames Madigan for everything. He blames Michael Madigan for a lot of things. He's, well, they're this, they're that, he's this, this. But then he turns around and say, I want to work with them. After he gets to bashing them and blaming them and talking about them in the negative, well, we can work together to find something out. This is the type of guy you can't trust. Bruce Rauner has bashed Mayor Emanuel when he was down. You don't kick no one when they're down, especially kick them in the press. You know, kick them while the camera is on you. He's done the same thing with Madigan. He's called Madigan every name in the book because Madigan had so much, had all the power, and Bruce has no power. How can you trust somebody like this? It's like your friend, it's like your best friend turning on you. And this is what Rauner does to Emanuel. He does it to Michael Madigan. A lot of people are blaming Michael Madigan for the state, for the mess in Chicago, for the mess in Illinois. Stop blaming Madigan. Yeah, he has his flaws. But there's 400 spending bills, to my understanding, on Rauner's desk. All he has to do to stop this madness, which is only getting worse, road construction is starting to be affected. Charter schools are actually closing. They're not thinking about closing. They're not going to close 2 or 3 months down the road. They're closing right now. Matter of fact, they have closed their doors because of this budget stalemate. And all Madigan is doing, yeah, he's doing it too. He's blaming Rauner. Rauner's blaming him. Rauner's blaming Emanuel. Emanuel's blaming Rauner. But the problem is that Rauner is, he can blame as many of these other politicians as he wants. Bruce Rauner is the governor of Illinois. He gets the brunt of the blame because he has all of these bills, spending bills that can take this state out of the mess that he put it in right now. But he's constantly saying, we can't do this, we can't do that, it can't be done, it's too far much out of the budget, I'm not getting what I want. So the state burns. He has a turnaround agenda that the legislature has rejected, and that's a good thing because that turnaround agenda is bad for the middle class in the city of Chicago. It's bad. I know it. And I myself is rejecting a temporary stopgap funding bill. Why would we settle for something that's temporary? We're 2 cycles behind in signing a budget in the state of Illinois. As soon as if he somehow does, I don't think he will, sign a budget, he will immediately have to sign another one. This is crazy. Bruce Rauner is to blame for this. I know a lot of people on social media, a lot of people everywhere, they don't know what they're talking about. Obviously, if a lot of people are on the side of Bruce Rauner, they must be rich, they must be non-caring about the schools, non-caring about working families, non-caring about daycare centers and all of these other non-caring about the state in general, because that's what's happening to the state. The state is going completely kaput under this governor, and all he's doing is traveling the state, bashing Chicago, bashing the schools, turning people against each other, fighting them. You know, that's what he tries to do, because he has tried to turn Michael Madigan against Rahm Emanuel, and these are both Democrats. How can you trust somebody like that? He tries to turn them against each other, calling Rahm Emanuel some names because he will not talk to Michael Madigan about adopting Rauner's agenda. That's crazy. But it's true. However, Rauner can spin his way out of this mess, but it's going nowhere, because the people of Illinois, we are not stupid. We know who to blame for this is. Rauner's been trying to travel. He's been trying to visit the south and west sides of the city, and these people are saying, hey, we don't want you over here. You want to come over here, you get a budget. You have decimated the south and west sides of the cities with your budget cuts. And now you want to come over here? You want to visit us? What the hell you have to talk about? And suddenly he cancels. And he gives some weak-ass excuse for canceling, but we know why he canceled. They didn't want him there. It could have been a riot, a violence over there, because he has ruined those communities on the south and west sides of the city, where there is a dominant proportion of poor people. Why would he go over there? They don't want him visiting over there, and they don't. And he stated, I'm not going to go over there because of blah, 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 blah. But we know why he won't visit. This guy is a mess. He blames everybody. He's totally untrustworthy. If you're going to have a friend, make sure it's not Governor Bruce Rauner, because if you ever need a friend, he's just going to bash you. He's going to kick you while you're down. That's what he's done. That's what he has done to Murray Emanuel. That's what he's doing. He's done that to Michael Madigan, kicked them when they're down. And you don't do that. And then turn around and say, well, we need to work together. I mean, when you're kicking and bashing people when they're down, and you say you want to work with them, you think they're going to work with you? Hell no. Hell no. You just told me I'm rotten at my job. You just told people to vote me out of office, and now you want me to work with you? Rauner doesn't know the first thing. Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, he doesn't know the first thing about governing. And now he's going around the state, talking to different groups around the state everywhere, as if he is the one who's trying to save the state. Yeah, and that's something. He's acting like he's the victim, that everybody's picking on him. This is why I tell people, do not fall for his BS. Some people will. There's no doubt about that. Some people will fall for what he's saying, because there's too many people that I know of that are. And they're trying to tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I do know this. If Rauner would have never elected or bought the office, this would not be happening. Illinois would not be in this mess. He is the governor of Illinois. He takes the brunt of the problems that are happening. Stop blaming Madigan. Stop blaming Culloden. He is the governor. He's the president of Illinois. He takes the brunt of the blame. If you can't get those two factions together to compromise, to work with him, then that's on you, Mr. Governor, not them. He's pissed off that Madigan has the power that he has. He's pissed off that Madigan has the unions in his pocket. Rauner doesn't like unions. Madigan is trying, I think Madigan in some ways is trying to protect Illinois. He's trying to help the middle class. A lot of people would disagree with me on that. That's your prerogative. If you should. And I don't blame Madigan or Cullerton for not accepting a temporary stopgap Bruce Rauner. This, you don't need something that's part-time. You don't need something that's half-assed. That's what this stopgap budget is, half-assed. It'll fix the budget for a few months, then we're back into the same situation. That doesn't make sense when we can have a whole budget instead of a half a budget. So I'm with them on that. Even though, as long as there is no budget, programs and, I mean, everything is suffering. If you could name it in the state of Illinois that is federally funded, it is suffering because of these jackasses will not get their asses together. And I'm talking about the entire legislature and Bruce Rauner. Them jackasses, they can't get their acts together, and the people are suffering. Of course, if Bruce Rauner was to come around in my neighborhood, what the hell would he have to tell me? There's no way I would listen to this man. You know, I mean, for a second year, we have no budget this part, and you're going to try come here in my community to tell me that somebody else is to blame and you're the governor? Give me a break. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. I will be right back. Thanks for listening. We still have more to go on the show. All right. It is such a beautiful day, folks. It's in the 90s. It's a great time of the day. It's wonderful. And you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. For the rest of the week, we're going to have some great guests on the show, folks. So you guys stick around for that. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Right. As the world probably knows, if I can get this out of my mouth, if the world probably knows, more likely the world do know that King James and the Cavaliers have won their first title in 52 years, 1964. Isn't that something? We were watching the game last night, and it was just this thrilling. It was totally thrilling. But there's no doubt about it that Golden State, they somehow – at the end, they just fell apart. They were missing shots like 40 going north. They were missing shots. But King James, LeBron James, and the Cavaliers. I don't like to call it LeBron James and the Cavaliers. I just want to call it the Cleveland Cavaliers. But everybody else is saying King James, you know. And it was a thrilling game. It really, really, truly was. And the NBA is over until next season. I'm not a sports guy, as you probably know. I don't know anything. I don't know how to talk sports. I try, and I get away with it sometimes, but this is a talk show on any subject. So I just wanted to mention King James and the Cavaliers winning their first NBA title in 52 years. I want to congratulate them, and I want to congratulate the city of Cleveland and the state of Ohio. This has to be some great, great news. 52 years. And I wonder if LeBron James, if he will be back next season with the Cavaliers. You know, it looks like he will try. I think he won two championships with Miami, but somehow he said that didn't please him as much as winning, coming home to Cleveland and winning a championship for Cleveland. So congratulations to LeBron James, King James, as some call him, and the Cavaliers. And I was watching the game last night, and I thought it was more than – I thought it was a team effort myself. I didn't think – but I did see that magnificent block that James made on one of the Golden State players. That was great. I mean, he stopped it cold. But generally speaking, I think that the entire team, Cleveland Cavaliers, the entire team, this was a team win. I don't think it was a totally LeBron James win. Of course, you could disagree with me. That's fine. But I thought it was a team effort, a great team effort. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You miss the show here, you will miss a hell of a lot. And it is such a nice day, folks. I was out today, and it was just gorgeous. I knew. I said, oh, wow. Take my show out. Take my radio show out and do it out in the park or somewhere on the beach. It's just great weather, folks, and I hope it's great weather where you are. Remember what I said at the beginning of the show. If you're going to go out in this hot-ass weather, make sure you take a bottle of water, you know, stay in the shade. Do not try to be do things that are too strenuous, you know. I think the best time when it's 95 and up, I think the best place to be is probably indoors somewhere, you know. A lot of the cities have, if you're homeless, you can always go to the library. There's city agencies that's going to stay open late just so they can conduct, you know, they can accommodate a lot of people that's going to be showing up just to, you know, get into the air conditioner. So get to the air conditioners. And don't try to beat the heat. Try to, you know, get out of it, because this heat is deadly. It has some people have lost their lives in Arizona because of the 120 degree heat. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We will be right back.
It's just been 24 hours since the deadliest mass shooting in American history, and this morning we know a lot more about the gunman, but little about his motive. 50 people dead, another 53 wounded after the authorities say 29-year-old Omar Mateen opened fire inside the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. FBI agents have descended on Mateen's home about 120 miles away in Fort Pierce, Florida, looking for anything that may explain why he carried out this attack. Sources tell NBC News' Pete Williams that before opening fire, Mateen called 911, pledged allegiance to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and mentioned the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. According to authorities, gunfire erupted inside the club just after 2 in the morning. A hostage situation unfolded, and by 5 a.m., police decide to go in, driving an armored vehicle through a wall. A gunfight then broke out between police and Mateen. Some of the audio of that exchange you can hear in this clip. During the gunfire, one bullet hit an officer, his Kevlar helmet likely saving his life. Mateen was killed in the exchange, and police say 30 people were rescued from the club. According to the ATF, Mateen bought the two guns used in the shooting just within the past week or so, a handgun and an AR-15 style rifle like you see here. Investigators say both firearms were purchased legally. Mateen's father posted a video to Facebook last night saying he is shocked and saddened by what his son has done. And here's what he tells NBC News this morning.
Was your son radicalized in any way that you know of?
No. No, he was taking care of his family, going to work. He doesn't have even a beard. He didn't miss his work. He was always on time. So I didn't see anything different that the way that he was behaving himself before. And until yesterday, he was the same.
So where did he get these crazy ideas?
That's what I said. I wish he was alive. I could ask him that question. One question. Why did he do it?
Now, obviously, Mika, that's what people across America are asking. Here's some of the headlines today. The Boston Globe talking about the massacre in Orlando. The Washington Post leads with the headline, 50 killed at a gay nightclub. The Wall Street Journal talks of a night of terror in Orlando. And the New York Times talks about a gunman praising ISIS. And you have, right next to me, let's move over here, you have the USA Today massacre, and then the Daily News talking about the NRA, and obviously, Willie, a lot of issues, of course, came spewing out.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, Blog Talk Radio, obviously, in the city of Chicago. It is hot, folks. It's a great weather, but it's tough. And like I keep saying all the time, make sure you, if you have to get out in this weather, make sure you are prepared for it because it can be deadly. It can be deadly. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for being here, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for podcasting the show. Wow, I can barely say it. But thanks for podcasting the show, and thank you for all your good thoughts and everything. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's go to the phones. We have a caller. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead. You're on. Okay, apparently we don't have anyone, folks. That just it happens sometimes. All righty, we're back. We will be back in a minute.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right. It has been a violent weekend in the city of Chicago this past Father's Day weekend, folks. It's just heartbreaking that people in the city of Chicago and in some cases around the world, they just keep on shooting. Keep on killing each other. There's nothing you can do, nothing I can say that these people are to these people who are going to keep on murdering because that's what they are. The police officers, they take guns off the street every day and all the time. But somehow they're not taking enough of them off the street because the bad guys still have them. And guns are too readily available. There is no doubt about that. And we're back to talking about gun control. From my understanding in the House of Representatives, right now in Congress, they're debating. People are coming up with ideas for gun control. Two on the Republican side, two on the Democratic side. We'll see where that goes. And probably the NRA right there in the middle. But something has to be done, folks. This thing in Orlando, Florida last week, that was the tip of the iceberg. You know, and something has to be done. Something has to be said. Something has to be done about guns. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, George, you want them to take away our guns? No, I have guns myself. I'm not going to go out there and shoot 49, 50 people. There is no doubt about it. This guy, this killer, this shooter, I'm not going to mention his name. This guy was, he should have never been able to buy the weapons that he had, especially after being 10 months on the FBI watch list. He should have been on the wanted list. Watch list. And this thing to me stinks. There is no doubt about it, folks. The FBI was at fault here. The FBI, they blew it. These guys blew it. But now the FBI, the director, and all these folks, they're all over the television. They're all over the internet trying to defend their actions. There is nothing to defend. You screwed up. You had him in your hands. You had this shooter twice, and you let him go. Now what has happened? He done shot up this gay bar. And now you got – and there's another problem I have. I think I mentioned this a few shows back. When this guy was shooting up the Pulse gay bar in Orlando, Florida – the authorities, the police arrived on the scene and no one, it took them 2 hours before they actually went in to subdue this guy. 2 hours. He had 2 hours of shooting before the police, you know, actually busted in on him to take him down. 2 hours. That means he was shooting his ass off. Shooting his ass off. And people, young people were laying on the floor of this nightclub bleeding while these asshole authorities were still out there waiting to figure out what time it was they were going to go in and get this guy. The thing is, soon as the SWAT team, the police, and everybody else, as soon as they arrived on the scene and this guy was shooting, they should have gone in immediately. I think if they'd have done something like that, more lives would have been saved instead of 49 and 53 injured. So I have two issues with this, and I'm not the only one. I think other people do too. I have two issues with this. However, in both cases, it was the police. It was the authorities. And in both cases, they're coming out defending their actions on why they waited so long to go into this nightclub to get this guy, to nail this guy. Just as the FBI had this guy on their watch list twice, and they for 10 months, and they let him go. Even Hillary Clinton was saying, hey, wow, what the hell? You had him on your watch list. Why was he able to go out and buy assault guns, assault weapons, weapons that are used for war? Why was he able to do that? They find some sort of way to spin their way out of it, to explain away this. But there is no explaining away. You know, you screwed up, you messed up, own it. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's just this Orlando thing. It just boggles the mind because it did not have to happen, folks. It did not have to happen. All right, back to Chicago violence. A violent weekend. There's no doubt about it. I better stop. Put this gum down in my mouth. 300 homicides this weekend. I believe that's an error. It may be 300 homicides since the beginning of the year. Okay. Assault shootings not caught. I mean, you had the people you I think there was a murder this weekend that was caused by an assault weapon. An assault weapon was used, and the perpetrator, the shooter, is still not caught. He or she is on the loose. Bloody Chicago weekend. Three-year-old child was shot. You know, you don't want to get numb to these shootings. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people in Chicago are numb to these shootings. Even if the shootings are children, you become numb to them because it happens. You really can't stop your way of living to cry and moan and go to somebody's funeral all the time because this is happening. A lot of people are becoming numb. I'm one that is not numb to these shootings, and I don't think I ever will get used to people dying uselessly, especially children dying uselessly in the city of Chicago because we have a superintendent. I do think Eddie Johnson, every time he seems like he really wants to lower crime in the city of Chicago, but I do think this guy is overwhelmed. I think he probably didn't realize the nature of his job. Chicago, you know, and because since he's been superintendent, crime has not gone down. It has gone up. And you're telling yourself, what are we paying this guy for? Just like the superintendent before him, Gary McCartney, crime was not going down under him. Crime was going up. And they can't really seem to find a solution to solving all these murders, these crimes. Their solution is to take guns off the street. Their solution is to keep the guns out of the hands of the bad guys by, you know, providing background checks for every weapon that is sold. Those are good ideas, but they're bad ideas when it comes to the guns that are actually out on the street. You can put all kind of restrictions on guns now, but what about the guns that are already out here? Remember, I mean, it's legal to carry a gun in all 50 states, and anybody who has an ID can probably go buy one. In some cases, you can go to these gun shows. You don't need any ID. You just, you know, the money, you just purchase a gun. And I understand that most of these guns come from gun shows, and a lot of guns come from people buying guns in droves and handing these guns out to gangbangers. That happens too. But the crime in the city of Chicago we need people with surefire plans that's going to save lives in the city of Chicago. Bruce Rauner is not going to save lives in the city of Chicago. He mentions crime, but he does nothing about it. Rahm Emanuel, he mentions the crime statistics in Chicago, and then he talks about the Lucas Museum as if the Lucas Museum is more important than lowering the crime rates in the city of Chicago. We need a superintendent that knows what he's doing. We know all of everything that he tries to tell us on trying to solve crimes, but this is not working. He needs new ideas. He's a nice guy. I think Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police for Chicago, I think he's a nice guy. I think he really wants to get crime down. I don't think he wants to always blame parents for their children, because sometimes the parents are the culprits themselves. He really needs to get a handle on bringing crime down. Chicago has the most crime than New York. Chicago has the most crime than Los Angeles, Houston, you name it. And we're only the third largest state. We're going to be the fourth pretty soon because people are leaving because of the budget and the problem with the schools, which I want to touch on later because we do have schools that are closing because of the budget impasse. And once again, Bruce Rauner is just, he's the governor, but he's pointing the blame to somewhere else when he has all the power in the world to stop this. Yeah, and let's get back to Chicago. We got to do something about the crime. We just can't become numb to it. Say, well, it's just Chicago. Another child shot in Chicago. Let's move on. You can't really do that. You have to really, really try to figure out what the hell. I applaud Father Flager. I hope most of you know who I'm talking about. If you don't, you can always research his name. But anyway, I applaud him because he's genuinely want to stop the crime on the west side and south sides of the city. But he's going to need help. He's going to need a lot of help, especially from authorities, the police officers, the guys who get paid to deter, serve, and protect. So we do have a problem. I've offered solutions on this show to solving crimes. I try not to talk about anything that's going on in Chicago where I do not myself have a solution to. I think the solution to a lot of crimes, I'm going to say this again, I've said it 1,000 times, I think the solution to some of the crime in Chicago, especially the massive crimes, is saturating these. I think someone's been listening to me on this because I've heard about it. I've heard that someone's probably adopting my ideas, but it's not funny. It's the truth. My solutions to the crimes in the city of Chicago and elsewhere is to saturate these crime-ridden neighborhoods with police officers. Saturate them. Police everywhere. And if you do saturate some of these crime areas with police officers, the gangbangers, the thugs are going to be shooting at the police officers. Yeah, these guys are just that bold. But one thing. But there's a difference, and that difference is that the police officers will shoot back and possibly nail this son of a gun. Saturate, and if you don't have the manpower for hiring all these cops, what do you think the National Guard is for? They're sitting on their hands, probably, you know. The National Guard out there if you don't have the manpower. Ask federal government for help. Let go of your pride and ask for help in solving these crimes, or they will not be solved, no matter how many cops you put over there. Because if you're patrolling these areas, you on foot and in the car, the gangbangers know when you're patrolling and they know when you're not patrolling. And another thing is, the police in Chicago, they talk about crime in these high crime areas that are poverty driven. Most people are poor. The police, they know who the gangbangers are. The police know where the gangbangers are. They know who the shooters are. They know where the shooters are. Especially if 90% of these killings are gang-related. The first thing you want to do during your investigation is to go check out these gangs and get them off the street. I think if anybody is in a gang, a noted gang, and this person totally a gang member and has a gang, I think they should be disrupted. I think they should be disrupted. I think they should be taken off the street to jail. If you are a gang member, and if any member of your gang has committed a crime, that gang should be broken the hell up. You've got to get a handle on the crime. If you know who the perpetrators are, go there, arrest them, dismantle the gang, make sure it will not get back together to kill and shoot more people. First of all, you have to saturate the community. Do not just have cops patrolling, walking the beat, you know, driving around in their car, because the gangbangers, the bad guys, and girls are watching. They know when the police are patrolling. They know when the police are not patrolling. I've said this before. I think police, there should be policemen posted in some of these high crime communities. Posted. That means that that's where they will be. They will not have to, you know, be walking around the block or driving around the block. They will be posted there. That's where they are posted. They're posted there for maybe 4 to 8 hours a day. Then they are, their relief will show up. Someone will show up to take the next shift. They should be posted in these communities until the crime is under wraps. If some of these solutions that I throw out here are not implemented, will not be implemented, or people think they're crazy or they're this or it's that, then crime will continue in the city of Chicago. I'm offering my help because it doesn't seem like they know what the hell they're doing. And my understanding that Mayor Emanuel, he is reaching out for ideas on how to lower the crime rate in the city of Chicago, because they're not doing, they don't seem to know what they're doing, because the more they say they have plans to do this and plans to do that, the more people are killed. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back, folks.
Joe Biggs is out in front of the nightclub where 50-plus people were killed last night. Joe Biggs, great job getting up early this morning from Texas and getting on all those flights out there, and you're now in the rain. Joe Biggs.
Roger that. Joe Biggs here with Infowars.com. Now, we just arrived in Orlando, and as you can see, there's a lot of police vehicles right here in the center of the road. The nightclub's actually right down to maybe about 50-so yards from us at this point in time. You know,
it has just been 24 hours since the deadliest mass shooting in American history, and this morning, we know a lot more about the gunman, but little about his motive. 50 people dead, another 53 wounded after the authorities say 29-year-old Omar Mateen opened fire inside the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. FBI agents have descended on Mateen's home about 120 miles away in Fort Pierce, Florida, looking for anything that may explain why he carried out this attack. Sources tell NBC News' Pete Williams that before opening fire, Mateen called 911, pledged allegiance to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and mentioned the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. According to authorities, gunfire erupted inside the club just after 2 in the morning. A hostage situation unfolded, and by 5 a.m., police decide to go in, driving an armored vehicle through a wall. A gunfight then broke out between police and Mateen. Some of the audio of that exchange you can hear in this clip. During the gunfire, one bullet hit an officer, his Kevlar helmet likely saving his life. Mateen was killed in the exchange, and police say 30 people were rescued from the club. According to the ATF, Mateen bought the two guns used in the shooting just within the past week or so. A handgun and an AR-15 style rifle like you see here. Investigators say both firearms were purchased legally. Mateen's father posted a video to Facebook last night saying he is shocked and saddened by what his son has done. And here's what he tells NBC News this morning.
Was your son radicalized in any way that you know of?
No. No, he was taking care of his family, going to work. He doesn't have even a beard. He didn't miss his work. He was always on time. So I didn't see anything different that the way that he was behaving himself before. And until yesterday, he was the same.
So where did he get these crazy ideas?
That's what I said. I wish he was alive. I could ask him that question. One question. Why did he do it?
Now, obviously, Mika, that's what people across America are asking. Here's some of the headlines today. The Boston Globe talking about the massacre in Orlando. The Washington Post leads with the headline, 50 killed at a gay nightclub. The Wall Street Journal talks of a night of terror in Orlando. And the New York Times talks about a gunman praising ISIS. And you have, right next to me, let's move over here, you have the USA Today massacre, and then the Daily News talking about NRA, and obviously, Willie, a lot of issues, of course, came spewing out immediately after this from all sides ideologically. It's just as sick as usual. Give it a day. Let's mourn the victims and try to figure out what's going on. But a lot of fingers pointing, but of course what everybody wants to know most of all is, why did this happen and how do we stop it from happening again?
Yeah, I was on the air yesterday all day, and it was almost immediate. When people running to their battle stations, as you point out, you know, it became immediately, before anyone knew any facts, it was about this or it was about that, and here's why he did it. We don't know why he did it yet, except now that we've heard some of his claims. We know what he said about ISIS in that 911 phone call. Graham, you can speak to this better than I can. We're in an age now where you don't have to have any direct tie with ISIS. You can be inspired by ISIS. You can have a laptop or an iPhone and read something and feel some connection to ISIS, and then ISIS can retroactively claim that he was an ISIS fighter. So that's his claim, is that he did it in the name of ISIS and of radical Islam.
Yeah, I would even go a bit further. ISIS, in many ways, doesn't even want him to have a connection before the fact. They've said, at this point, you should just attack in place, where you are, when you can. And if you seek our approval in advance, then you're just exposing yourself to being foiled, your plot never coming to fruition. So they've told their supporters, just do it. Do it now. Don't bother coming here anymore. Mm.
All right, let's bring in NBC's Chris Jansing. She's in Orlando, Florida, with more on the investigation into the gunman. Chris, what more do we know about him?
You know, it's remarkable how quickly this profile of Omar Mateen emerged, that he was someone who was filled with hate, who was violent. Mateen's father told NBC News his son became enraged recently after he saw a same-sex couple kissing in Miami in front of his family. The FBI says it first became aware of the 29-year-old back in 2013. Now, he made threats to coworkers, including what an agency spokesman called, and I'm quoting here, possible ties to terrorist activities. And then the FBI looked at him again the following year because he contacted Abu Salah, an American who traveled to Syria to become a suicide bomber for al-Nusra. Abu Salah, who also lived in Fort Pierce, was the first American to carry out a suicide attack in Syria. U.S. officials say he tried to recruit some of his friends to fight in Syria, and then when he got back to his hometown back in 2013. One of them actually did alert the FBI, but by then, Abu Salah had already left the U.S. Now, at the time, the FBI decided that Mateen's contact with Abu Salah was minimal. They didn't feel it posed any kind of a real threat. Law enforcement officials have told NBC News there's no indication Mateen was in touch with terrorists overseas or that the attack was directed by someone else, to the point of what you guys were talking about. So meanwhile, we're also hearing from Mateen's ex-wife. She talked to the press yesterday, and she described her former husband as unsound, claiming he was physically abusive and had in the past taken steroids, and that she actually left all of her belongings behind to escape their life together.
Instability, emotional instability, sickness, mentally, he was mentally unstable and mentally ill. That's the only explanation that I could give, and he was obviously disturbed. When he would get in his tempers, he would express hate towards things, toward everything. So in that respect, you know, yeah. But it was at the moment when you would see his emotional instability and turning totally different.
And meantime, we have these portraits of the victims emerging from 20 to 50 years old. And I think one of the most heartrending stories of the text messages that went back and forth between a son who was trapped in a bathroom and his mother. And then he went radio silent. And sadly, we learned this morning that that son, Eddie Justice, was among the victims. Willie?
Oh, that was one of the earliest stories we saw and one of the earliest sound bites we have that will be seared in my memory forever. Eddie's mother screaming, looking for her son. Chris Jansing in Orlando. We'll be checking back with you throughout the morning.
Thanks. Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want to keep up to date with the video.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was on the Orlando's killings, and because people are still talking about that, it's going to be talked about for a long time because it's the worst mass killing, terrorist killing in U.S. history. So you know we're going to be talking about that a little bit more on the show. Okay, we got the first day of summer here, folks, and I have up here on the board medication. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to that because it's basically saying that do you really need your medication? Do you really need that prescription? You know, I'm gonna have a doctor on the show, so she's gonna tell you a lot more about that. I'm even curious myself about that, but. Here's some things that I do know about some medications, and I think I've talked about this before, and it's worthy of being discussed again. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762, or you can just sit back, relax, and listen to the show and let me do all the work. We will have some guests, some great guests on the show as the week progresses. It will happen, folks. It totally will happen. 347-857-1762. Let's get back to medication. As you probably know, and as I have been talking about so much and all the time, and I will continue to espouse this, medication, medicine, the medical industry is all about profit. It's about profit, keeping you sick is what the medical industry is all about. They don't want you to get well. If you get well, there's nothing wrong with you anymore. That means you will not need their medication. It means that they will not get your money. Makes sense? It's a profit. I mean, a lot of us know that, and a lot of people do not know. Or the doctor and get a prescription for this or that, and you're always feeling that your medication may be keeping you alive. Most of the time, your medication is the one that's killing you. It's not keeping you alive. All the side effects, it's just too many. The side effects of some medicines are just enormous. You ever watch some of these commercials on television telling you to take Xantex and all of these weird named drugs on television, on broadcast TV, telling you to take this drug? They're always citing the benefits of the drug, okay? They're always citing the benefits of it. And it doesn't take no more than a second or two to cite the benefits of the drug. But it takes maybe 5 to 10 minutes to tell you about the side effects of that drug. That should tell you right now, folks, do not take that drug, even if it's doctor recommended, because the side effects are too numerous. Too numerous. But however, the benefits are very, very little, if any. So you're just taking that chance of purchasing that drug because some doctor recommended it. And I will say this, folks, if you have an ailment, if you don't understand something, if a doctor tells you something, get a second and third opinion. Do not go with just one opinion. Who knows? A doctor might have been having a bad day and sprouted out the wrong thing. You never know. Anyway, you want to be safe. So we're going to be talking about medication a lot more in the coming maybe weeks, you know, because I do have a physician booked for the show. And she's been on the show before, and she's always enlightening my audience on how they should take care of themselves. And that's what this show is about, for you to take care of yourself. There's so many shows out there that's trying to get you to take care of yourself, and this is one of them, okay? I don't try to say that I'm in competition with any other talk show host out there, whether it's a TV show host or a radio show host or whatever you're hosting, because I feel that we're all in the same boat. I feel that there's enough room out there for all of us to be successful, to gain that trusting audience and loyalty from that audience. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will talk more about medication later on in the show. I want to get back to talking about Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. You know, there are some shows that I've podcasted, and I have really railed on some. I may have lost listeners because I'm always talking about Bruce Rauner, but as long as the state of Illinois is without a budget, and we're without a budget right now, folks, for the second time, we've got one of the worst governors in the history of Illinois, in the history of the United States, who's now acting as if he's the victim of all of this. And I have a headline in front of me saying, the governor who won't back down, he won't back down. Basically, if this headline is saying the governor, Bruce Rauner of Illinois, will not back down, that's telling you right there, basically, if you translate that, it says the governor will not sign a budget no matter what. That's basically what that's saying to me. The second part of it is saying that he is focused on running for governor again in 2018. Can you believe that? This guy has totally upended, destroyed this state, turned it upside down, unemployment through the roof because he's cut programs and laid off people, and now he wants to run again. He's stopping paychecks. He doesn't need a paycheck. He's rich, so he doesn't need one. So he doesn't give a damn if you got one or not. Rauner does not care about people. That's the bottom line. Bruce Rauner, the guy in Illinois, he does not care about people. He doesn't. If he cared about people, Illinois would not be in the mess and shape that it's in. These people are blaming Michael Madigan and Cullerton. It's this monster right here, Bruce Rauner. And now he wants to run. He wants to be reelected. Give me a joke. We all know that's the reason why he's been crisscrossing the state, bad-mouthing Chicago, bad-mouthing to politicians, and he's the one with the pen that can take this state out of the mess that it's in, no matter who put it in, no matter who did it. He's the governor. This is his state. But yet, he's claiming that Michael Madden has all the power and he has none and he can't do nothing. But he wants to run again. And like I've said earlier, the guy is not to be trusted. He turns his back on his friends. He kicks them when they're down. And then he turns around and says, I want to work with you. How in the hell can you work with a guy who just bashed you, embarrassed you in public, and hope people vote you out of office? Now this guy wants to be reelected. He hasn't even done his job, folks. He hasn't, his job, his number one job and this comes from the Illinois Constitution, is to have a budget. That's his job. He hasn't done it. There's no budget, so it means he has not done his job. He's one of the worst governors ever. There are some people out there that disagree with me. That's fine. Obviously, if you disagree with me, you're on his side, which is cool. But I can tell you this, he will not win if he decides to run, and it looks like he's decided he will not get back in office. There's no way. His approval rating is 34%. His poll ratings, approval ratings, are 34% and lower. How is he going to build that? How is he going to, how is that going to increase in a year? How is that going to increase? And another thing, he has opponents. People are going to be running against him. Chris Kennedy. There is so much against him. There's so much they're going to be. The campaigns are going to be so much fun because they're going to run. The Democrats are going to run everything there is against this guy, Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner doesn't have a chance of winning in 2018. This is madness. He hasn't done his job in 2016. He hasn't done anything in 2015. But blame people, slash programs, cut budgets, laid people off, threatening. He is threatening people. He doesn't want the minimum wage. He wants to eliminate it, actually. He thinks state workers are making too much money. Yeah, he thinks state workers are making too much money. He doesn't like unions, and Illinois is a labor town. There's no way he's gonna be crazy to think that he's going to win. At least not at this point. I'm thinking that maybe he feels that he's going to. Obviously, folks, the man is gonna use his money. He's gonna use his money. You figure he's a billionaire, millionaire. He's gonna use his money to buy offices. He's going to try and use his money to buy the legislature. He's going to crisscross the state, lying, flying, and spinning, hoping to get Illinoisans to dislike Democrats and to like his Republicans and to put them in office and throw the Democrats out. This is what he's banking on. Bruce Rauner is campaigning as I am on the radio today. He's campaigning, and he's not up for re-election until 2018. It's mighty early, isn't it? The only reason why this guy is campaigning is because he knows that the Democrats are coming after his seat for 2018, and they're getting ready now. So this guy is crisscrossing the state, bad-mouthing Chicago, bad-mouthing the public schools, bad-mouthing everybody up here, to those people downstate, as if he doesn't, as if he's not the governor of Illinois. And then he sits on his ass on television and acts as if he's the victim of all of this. He's the cause of all of this. This is what politicians do. And they want us to think that too, because Bruce Rauner wants to turn this state into Bruce Rauner state. He wants this state to. He wants the power Michael Madigan has. He wants the power of unions. He doesn't have that now. So far, Bruce Rauner has been losing his ass off, and he doesn't like it. And every time that he loses something in the state of Illinois, if he loses out on a vote or this or that, he gets meaner. That means he cuts something or the budget will not be signed. He does something even dirtier. So this guy, oh, wow, this is funny. Okay, what does this say? Regardless of political affiliation, most elected officials agree Illinois is in a crisis. It totally is. You don't need to be an elected official to realize that Illinois is in a crisis. All you have to be is a part of Illinois, live in Illinois, be an Illinoisan. you will know that it's in a crisis. You don't need to be affiliated with anybody to know this. You can be working at the park or something. You have a great family, and you realize that your park position is about to go because of the budget. There's no money. So we know this. Regardless of political affiliation, if I can say the word, most elected officials agree Illinois is in a crisis. That I had to read that twice because that is so true. We are. And the crisis is only getting bigger. And we got politicians finger pointing at each other while the babies starve. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner on Monday again pushed lawmakers to return to Springfield and pass a budget for the fiscal year that starts a week from Friday. But he's dealing with a legislature that is mostly checked out this even though. I can see why they don't come back. They want a full budget. That's the reason why they're not coming back. Rauner wants a half-ass budget, okay? And now Rauner is blaming them for not coming back to pass his half-ass budget. There's budgets right now on Bruce Rauner's desk, full budgets, one-year budgets. Why would he want to pass a half of a year budget when there's full budgets on his desk? This is one of the reasons why the legislature is out. They're saying, Rauner, we have budgets on your desk. Sign them. But he will not sign them because they're full budgets, and Rauner wants a half-ass budget. The legislature, which includes Michael Madigan, John Cullerton, they want a full budget, not a stopgap budget. As I've just said, if we pass a stopgap budget, we will be back in this mess a few months from now. But that's what Rauner wants. He wants a stopgap budget. One of the things about the stopgap budget that I understand will not have any of his turnaround agenda incorporated. And, you know, it's just a mess. House Speaker Michael Madigan and Senator John Cullerton vowed at the close of the spring session May 31st that they would work immediately on a spending agreement, most likely a stopgap budget that would get them past the November election. I still am against a stopgap election, stopgap budget. I'm against it. I want a full budget, not one that's going to just help Illinois for a few months and Illinois is right back in the red again. It's crazy. Cullerton downplayed the lack of a budget by – they always downplay it. They downplay – Madigan downplays it, a lack of a budget in the state of Illinois. Bruce Rauner downplays it. Cullerton downplays it. But they may downplay the lack of a budget in the state of Illinois, but the people aren't. We're not, because we're the ones who are suffering from the lack of a budget. The museums, the colleges, the universities, the public schools, daycare centers, the lottery, you name it. If it's in Illinois, it's affected. Social programs. Each and every one of them, seniors, autism, mentally ill, all of this stuff. The jails, the juvenile detention centers. This stuff is affected by the budget. And however, these guys, the guys who are responsible for this, they're rich. They're rich. They're not worrying about missing a paycheck. They're not worrying about the next car note or the next house or the next house note or the next rent payment. They're not worried about that or the next furniture payment. They're rich. But you and I have to worry about those things. But not these jackasses. They don't have to worry about them. They can fight each other all they want. And I must say this again. Rauner does not care about anybody. And if he says he does, if he acts as if he does, he's lying. Because if Rauner cared about people, he would sign one of those he would sign one of those many budgets that's on his desk right now. There is no doubt about it, folks. We are in trouble in Illinois. We need divine intervention. We need Obama. We're in such a bad shape. We need the federal government to step in on this. But Obama he stays away from it, you know, so I don't know. I'm not sure if once this presidency is over, if he's going to come back to Chicago. He may not because of the mess. But we do need some sort of divine intervention in this because our politicians are just assholes. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They have theirs, but they're taking away what we have. They're not affected by this. I mean, Bruce Rauner is out there talking his ass off. I'm waiting to hear from John Cullerton and Michael Madigan. Cullerton is one of the weakest. He's one of the weakest politicians I've ever known. He gets his ass on television as if he's kissing Bruce Rauner's ass. He's one of the weakest Democrat that I've known. So I don't know what's going to happen, folks. It's just a mess in Illinois. I think we need an arbitrator or something that's going to act between these people or something because they don't know what the hell they're doing. They're ruining the state and all they're doing is pointing fingers at each other. And all of them are to blame, every one of them. But I do blame Bruce Rauner the most. I do blame him the most. All right, folks, 347-857-1762.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network, WTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me.
Right, folks, thanks for joining me. I hope you join me tomorrow on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Happy first day of summer. It's just been a gorgeous day. It's been beautiful. It's been wonderful. Remember, if you're going to get out here in this heat, protect yourself. Get you some skin lotion or something or other. And watch out for the bugs, the mosquitoes, West Nile, the Zika, all of this kind of thing. And thanks for being with me on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you guys tune in tomorrow, same time. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah. Muslim, you got the Muslim dead in the eye, or you will be out of a job. Because tomorrow, when you get that Thursday, you go, I'm not going to be there. I might drop you off, and I might. Because you're the one who has to talk to him, not me. He wants to hear from you, not me. You're the one who's going to be working there. You better be on your top game. Because when you're volunteering at a library, you're also getting ready. You're also preparing to find a real job where you can stay. That's what volunteering is for, especially for somebody your age. Like, if I volunteer, I just be volunteering to help out. You volunteering so you can get a good job, paying job. Because a good paying job will help you get your own apartment, buy you a car, get you a girlfriend. That's what a job is. With no job, you're out of the street. You can't pay your rent. You gotta have a job to pay your rent, buy a car, buy food, buy clothes. You need a job for that. Because they pay you money. And you go out and buy that stuff. Then you're gonna have to have a bank account so you can save money. Because if your rent is, remember, you gotta know how to manage money. That's the reason why we've been in this apartment so long. I knew how to manage money. I knew how. Wow, this is rent money. I can't spend this. I look for this aside. You cannot spend your rent money. If you spend your rent money, they're gonna throw you out. So you always save your rent money. Put it aside. Don't touch it. Don't even buy candy or junk with it. Leave it alone. Because if you spend it, you don't have enough. They're gonna throw you out. First thing you do is pay your rent. You get a job. So if your rent is $1,000 a month, let's say it's Denver, your rent is $1,000 a month, you have to put $200 away every week. $200. Next week, another $200. $600. Next week, another. Well, you got to, you know, if you don't have it, you have to learn how to manage money. If you don't manage it, you're going to what? Lose it. And if you lose it, you're going to be out in the streets. I like that analogy.
Yeah, he's trying to say a lot of nasty things about you. He really did.